Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
Here we go. A chilly Wednesday waiting for us. Not perhaps as chilly as yesterday was, but still chilly. And begs the question, why do I keep using the word chilly? I don't know. Maybe because it's chilly. Right now it is 47 degrees, going up to only 57. That's going to be toward the end of the day today. Tomorrow, highs of 59, 70% chance for showers. Then it clears out on Friday, highs of 64, and we go on a roller coaster, 70% chance for showers Saturday. Saturday is going to be a nice day, other than the rain, with highs near 70. So really, Friday, Saturday, those are the days you're going to want to take your cold preparations. Maybe Sunday, highs of 57, sunny. But then Monday, it turns cold. Highs Monday is only 40, 39 on Tuesday, 41 Wednesday, 46 Thursday. And a chance for freezes on the North Shore, maybe South Shore. And they don't quite know the timing of all of this. And they are actually talking about maybe a wintry mix. I don't know if it'll be here or maybe just up north in Yankee country in Baton Rouge, where we find Dr. Robert Hogan, professor in department and chair of political science at LSU. How you doing, Dr. Hogan?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm okay. How's everything way up Good. North there in Baton Rouge?
Oh, it's going very well. We're enjoying the winter, the 3 weeks of it that we usually get, like you all get.
Exactly.
It feels like January for once.
Man, I was in Washington, D.C. 2 weeks ago. It felt like January there. I'll tell you what, it was freezing, literally freezing.
I bet so.
Reflecting pool was frozen solid and all that kind of stuff. And the whatever that pond is in front of Congress, the Capitol, rather, that was frozen as well. Let's talk about the confirmation hearings that are going on. And
sure.
Let's talk about the role of the Congress in all of this. We'll talk about the process and we'll talk some of the practicalities of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the Senate is tasked with receiving the appointed, the designated people that the president would like to appoint to major cabinet posts. The president appoints all the major cabinet posts, 15 cabinet posts, including Secretary of State, Treasury, all the way down through education and agriculture, Veterans Affairs. And the way it works now, the Senate has to give its approval to these major heads of these cabinets, cabinet departments, as well as some of the people at second in command. He has the hiring and firing ability and needs Senate approval for about 1,000 people or so. And they're the people who control these departments. And there's always a tension. The president wants people who will do his bidding, so to speak, that accept his ideological perspective on the way these departments should be run. And so he wants people who will be loyal to him, but will hopefully do a good job in those positions. And Congress's responsibility, in this case, the Senate, a majority have to give their approval in the Senate, examine the nominees to confirm them, and they look at their backgrounds to see if they're qualified and see also if they will have fidelity to the interests of the departments that they're being asked to run. So there's always this inherent tension there, and Congress will most often, likely in the past, has done its responsibility of making certain that these are qualified people who are fit for these positions. So that's the way the system works. What's maybe very different this time is what you saw yesterday in the Congress, in the Senate hearings for the Trump's choice for the defense secretary, Mr. Hegseth. This was pretty unusual, I would say. I mean, the questioning had to do with his issues of his character, of his personal failings, of his position on controversial issues. The Democrats went away from that, thinking this is not someone who's even qualified. And in fact, historically, you have to look. It's hard to find someone who is less qualified for defense secretary than this nominee. This is someone who has experience in the military, who has served in the military, the National Guard in Minnesota, but has never held any higher, you know, level office in the military or rank in the military that we are accustomed to seeing previous designees or appointees have. So, I mean, there are legitimate questions about his judgment, his character, his qualifications, and Democrats were there as a loyal opposition to bring these things out, and the Republicans were there to try to provide support to their president's nominee. So we see this playing out, but I do think we're seeing something that's very different than we've seen in the past. I mean, given his qualifications, it's like, well, why is Trump if you look at his other appointees, look at his appointee for Secretary of State, which is Marco Rubio, someone who has a long career in the U.S. Senate, a long career of service, who has built up expertise in foreign relations in the Senate. That nominee is not going to have any problem, and Democrats will be fully supportive of it. This is someone who I think Trump sees as a loyalist to Mr. Hegseth, and someone that will do his bidding. And a lot of Democrats are saying that's going a little too far. We want someone who has qualifications and can earn the respect of the millions of people that work for the Defense Department and who serve in combat. One of the key things here you got to consider is you want to appoint someone who will have the respect and can get things done. It is not a simple task to run an organization of this magnitude. And I think that there are real legitimate questions about whether or not he has the qualifications.
So when it comes to being a cabinet secretary, and I think a lot of people automatically fall into line of either winning or losing. You support President Trump, you're either with him or you're against him. And they support Hegseth, and they don't maybe know about his qualifications. As Secretary of Defense, what will his job be? Let's look at it from that angle.
Sure. I mean, it is to run the Defense Department. I mean, it is a multi-faceted task. It's running a large organization. It is dealing with budgets. It's dealing with all sorts of things that you deal with running a large organization. And the concern is that he doesn't have experience in doing that kind of thing. But it also has to do with providing he will be the person who speaks to the president concerning military options. Every sort of military possibility that is considered involves the Secretary of Defense. He is in charge of the generals. In the United States, we have civilian control of the military, and he is that person. He is the person in charge that tells the generals what to do, tells all of the military what to do. And so it is probably, I would argue, in the present day, the most critical of the cabinet secretaries. And, and the question is, do you want someone that is loyal to Trump? Or do you want someone who has the qualifications to know how to get the job done? What is so critical here, it seems to me, is that we're in a situation where Trump wants to have a disruptor in that position. Okay. And Hegseth himself even said this at the hearing yesterday. He's going to be a disruptor. The question is, how do you balance someone who's going to be a disruptor with someone who can actually get something done? I think a lot of Democrats probably are thinking to themselves, let him appoint this person. This person will not be able to get anything done. He doesn't have the know-how. That sounds like a dangerous path in many respects.
Let me read two quick texts here, Doc, and then we'll take a break and come back. One of them says, what qualifies a senator who comes from a cattle ranching background or a senator who is formerly a family practice doctor to determine qualifications of a candidate seeking the position of Secretary of Defense or Secretary of Transportation, et cetera? Another text says Trump wants loyalists above anything else, doesn't care about qualifications. This will be another clown show where there's a revolving door of people in and out of these agencies and nothing will get done. That's a sampling of the texts I'm getting. You can send your thoughts in to the Oakland Art Jeweler Talk and Text Line at 504-260-1870. We'll talk about some other cabinet positions when we come back with Dr. Robert Hogan, Professor, Department Chair of Political Science at LSU, 623 Traffic Now, WWL. All right, 6:27 half. Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Dr. Robert Hogan, Professor, Department Chair of Political Science at LSU. As far as process goes, the hearings are happening now. The inauguration is Monday. J.D. Vance gets sworn in as vice president on Monday. He would be the deciding vote in the Senate, correct? What's needed to confirm a cabinet secretary, Professor?
A majority vote in the U.S. Senate, and then the current breakdown is 53 Republicans to 47 Democrats. If there's a party line vote, the president will get all of his nominees confirmed. So that's why so much attention yesterday was put on the senator from Iowa, Joni Ernst, who sits on that panel.
You're reading ahead,
and what she was going to do.
That's what I wanted to get to in the next minute here that we have left. She's a survivor of sexual assault.
Right.
Pete Hegseth has been battling allegations of sexual assault. He says he was cleared of any charges, but she's up for re-election in 2026. So how afraid is she of being primaried? What kind of pressure, what kind of power does President Trump have, and how likely is that to affect this vote?
No, I think what you saw is you saw her capitulate. I mean, she brought up serious questions, and she said she was going to go into the committee with some serious and important questions. She did not go after him in a way that you would think she would. She came out yesterday saying that she was going to give him his support. So that effectively means that it looks like he has a glide path to confirmation. And not only it's her vote, but a lot of people were looking to her. There's still four or five U.S. Republican senators on the fence here. But they were probably looking to see what she was going to do. But there was a tremendous campaign in her own state. Potential candidates to challenge her sort of were saber rattling, saying that they were thinking of running. And there was, a great sort of grassroots effort as well. So those things mattered. President Trump is extraordinarily powerful, probably the most powerful president the United States has ever had. And this is showing how that manifests itself.
They're going to hate me for asking you one more question at 6:30, but I gotta. And Professor, if you can be brief, please, to keep me out of trouble.
Sure.
But when it comes to a third of the Senate's up for re-election every 2 years, right? 2026.
Mm-hmm, right.
Does President Trump's power extend to senators that are not up for re-election in 2026 or not?
Well, I think so. I mean, a lot of senators who aren't up for re-election, they know that the voters have memories, and some of the other senators have other machinations about running for governor or higher office themselves. So, I think he has a lot of influence because he has a huge impact on party activists within his party.
Thank you, Professor. Appreciate your time. 6:30, time for WWL First News.